You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 464.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Well, look at that. We're back, Kevin. Hey, another Flopcast.
We took it easy last week. Last week we kind of relaxed. It was a short show. Nothing happened.
We had to gear up, though, for some serious Facts of Life talk this week.
That's the plan today. Facts of Life Part 2. We'll get into that in just a minute. Cornflake, first, what's going on for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Oh, Kevin. This is so dumb, but it's a thing, so we're going to talk about it.
That's not the National Whatever Day that I know. Have we ever done a dumb edition of National Whatever Day? It's always brilliant and cultured and classy.
Not this one. March 31st is World Backup Day. The idea is, though April Fool's Day is kind of dumb, you back up your files on March 31st so that nobody can play a prank on you, I guess. That was the original idea behind it. But just because it's also a good idea to back up your files for anything.
Here's a thought. If you've surrounded yourself with people who, as a prank, would delete all your files, I wouldn't look into a backup project that, yeah, I'd look into a whole life overhaul.
But it's a good idea to just have some sort of reminder to back up your files, or like when we record, have a backup recording of things just in case. I mean, we've had that happen before on the show.
You're not really in podcasting until you lose a show.
Right on.
Through some technical mishap. It has not happened to us a lot.
But when it happens in pretty spectacular fashion.
It's happened a couple times back when humans could gather. And when we used to do the Flopcast, here in Chickentown Studios together in person. And we would use the little Zoom recorder just in the room with us. And the battery indicator on it, for one thing, is a lie. Like, if the battery indicator says it's like 2/3 full, that means it's almost empty. It's going to die any time now. And also, when the battery on this recorder does die, there's no beep. There's no warning. It just dies.
Yeah, it just conks out.
Quietly. And so a couple of times, the battery died on us, and you and I just kept going. We had no idea that the show was not being recorded, and we were just pontificating into thin air. This stupid conversation that nobody else was ever going to hear. Yeah, that happened a couple of times. And then eventually, like, we look down. Oh, look, the little red light isn't there anymore. I wonder how long ago that happened.
But the podcast has evolved. Necessity is the mother of invention, I guess they say. And we have now a few different recordings of the show going. But the other thing I thought of for World Backup Day is like actually backing up. Would you say that you're particularly skilled when backing up your car?
You're going to celebrate Backup Day by backing up your car?
Very carefully.
Okay. As opposed to normally when you just floor it?
I'm still getting used to the fact that a backup, my new car has that video camera so that when you back up, you can see behind you without craning your neck.
Oh, yeah. With those backup cameras, it's game on now. Let's hit it. Let's go. There's no reason to ever drive forward anymore.
You just drive backwards everywhere you go.
Sure.
The first time I had one of those video things, I did not know how it worked, and I did back up into a cement barrier. So I'm getting better. I can continue to practice for World Backup Day.
My backup video screen is pretty good, but for some reason it shows Family Ties reruns all the time.
Oh.
It's like I'm backing into Alex P. Keaton every time I try to move my car.
Wow.
But it's good. I still like it. There may have been some kind of a recall on my particular make and model, but I like it this way, so I'm just keeping it. Do you keep your own backup copies of all the episodes of the Flopcast?
I do. I don't know what I'm ever going to use them for, but I have them.
You have a stockpile of all of our, all 460 whatever Flopcast episodes. Yes.
Yes.
You keep them in a cement bunker deep underground.
Guarded by turkeys.
Also, each week the show gets shipped off and archived at the Library of Congress.
Oh, yeah. That is a good place to have a backup now that I think of it.
Yeah. We have to preserve this very important show for future generations to study.
So true.
They have a lot to learn about stupid things. That's what we're here for. Happy backup day. Cornflake.
Yeah.
Remember last month we started our big project for the big stupid year, which we call the Backs of Life.
I remember, and I can't stop talking about it, Kevin. I am so excited that we're going to have another installment of this project this week.
You were excited. Hey, how about everybody's excited? The feedback that we've been receiving, people are going out of their minds. We have stirred up a Facts of Life frenzy among the Flopcast audience. I'm lying that I don't know that anybody cares that we're doing this.
You had me going. I was going to say, that does my heart so much good.
I don't know that anyone cares.
I care, Kevin.
But we are locked in on the Backs of Life. So the idea is a classic 80s sitcom, The Facts of Life, which ran for, I don't know, 9 years, something like that. Long, long run. And several times they tried to launch a spinoff show out of The Facts of Life with what we call a backdoor pilot. There'd be an episode of Facts of Life, which was just an attempt to, you know, create a new spinoff series. This happened several times over the course of the run of The Facts of Life. So we started last month, Backs of Life, as we're calling it, episode one, in which we looked at actually the Different Strokes episode, which was the backdoor pilot for The Facts of Life itself. This week, Backs of Life, episode two. Now we're into the actual Facts of Life series. Cornflake, have you watched and reviewed personally the backdoor pilot for today's show?
Sure have.
For the listeners, today we are talking about Facts of Life Season 2, Episode 16. The title of the show is Brian and Sylvia. So if you want to pause the show right now and go track down a copy of this episode of Facts of Life, that's fine. Or, who are we kidding? Nobody's going to actually do that. That's fine, though. Just keep listening. I don't think anyone's worried about spoilers for a sitcom from 1981?
Probably not. For what it's worth, though, I tracked it down on Roku.
Yep.
It's for folks who have Roku, I tracked it down on there for free.
You can watch Facts of Life on Roku?
Yes.
Good to know. Yeah, this isn't like a WandaVision spoilers.
No.
I don't think we're going to reveal anything that anybody cares about. Like, it's been Natalie all along. We're going to break into song, you know? So I think we're good. The episode is called Brian and Sylvia. This aired March 25th, 1981. Oh, so this is like 40 years ago, exactly.
Exactly 40 years ago as we record.
I just noticed that just now, that we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of the first Facts of Life backdoor pilot. Well, I'm surprised that didn't make the news. You'd think that everybody would just be out celebrating, you know, wherever you go.
I'd like to see more of that in this world, Kevin.
This must be another victim of the pandemic. You know, I'm sure in normal times, there would have been massive public outdoor gatherings.
Just celebrating the spinoff that never was.
This would have been like at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles. Kim Fields and Mindy Cohn would have been there on stage with a giant symphony orchestra, fireworks.
Man, that would have been glorious.
Everything's been ruined all year, but we're going to fix this right now because we are celebrating Brian and Sylvia. So yeah, March 25th, 1981. Just to give you an idea where the world was at this time, I looked up the number one song the week that this show came out was Rapture by Blondie.
That's pretty great.
That's a cool song. She was rapping. That's Debbie Harry rapping in Rapture, right?
Yes.
She's rapping about the man from Mars.
Like you do.
Absolutely. Do you think she was talking about Robillard specifically?
I'm certain of it.
Probably.
Next question.
So that was the number one song anyway. Number one movie. It's a weird one. Number one movie this week in March 1981 was The Omen 3, The Final Conflict. A sequel to a sequel to a 70s horror movie. It's movies were so weird back then. Again, this was just on the brink of the blockbuster era. But in 1981, just these weird little movies could still be number one, which didn't really happen much as the 80s rolled along.
Progressed, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark was about to come out. Then it was all over. But the Omen Part 3, The Final Conflict, was actually the number one movie this week. And weirder still, the number one thing on TV this week was not this episode of The Facts of Life. You'd think that this would have been, you know, what the nation was most obsessed with.
People had no taste.
Was Facts of Life. But, oh, you're not kidding, Cornflake. Number one TV show, Bob Hope's All-Star Comedy Birthday Party from West Point.
I think I just threw up a little in my mouth.
That's what more people watched than anything else. And this is 1981 TV ratings. That's not like today. Nobody watches anything. So, you know, the top show gets like 16 and a half viewers.
Right.
Back then, like there must have been tens of millions of people watching a stupid Bob Hope variety special when they could have been watching The Facts of Life. So let's get into this. Here we go. 1981, season two, of course. This is the Joe era. And the only time you see the whole regular Facts of Life cast is the very beginning of the episode.
Just so you know, you're watching an episode of Facts of Life.
Yeah, just as the bait and switch is about to happen. They've roped in all the regular Facts of Life fans, and they are about to do you a huge disservice as this pivots into a bizarre backdoor pilot. But right at the beginning, here's the whole cast, and it's Tootie and Natalie are about to leave on a bus trip to visit Tootie's aunt in Buffalo, New York.
Yeah, completely unimportant to the plot.
Yeah, it's just, let's get all the girls in there.
To talk about getting on a bus.
Like 2 minutes. Yeah, this is very, very important. We're about to get on a bus scene. And that's it. No more Blair, Joe, or Mrs. Garrett for the entire rest of the episode. Now it's just Natalie and Tootie are off to Buffalo. We don't actually see them on the bus. We just see them about to leave to get on the bus. And now we cut to an apartment in Buffalo, New York. And this is, you know, generic sitcom apartment.
Yes, the living room.
Of course. You know that sitcom living room with the couch in the middle of the room? You know, every living room, every apartment in every sitcom, the couch right in the middle of the room.
Yep.
Whereas how many houses have you been in or apartments in your life where the couch is in the middle of the room?
Approximately zero. And yourself.
Very close to that number. Yeah. So that's what we get here. And here is Tootie's aunt and her husband. And we actually talked about this episode years ago. It came up somehow because the title of the show is Brian and Sylvia. But I was referring to it as Tootie's aunt and MacGyver.
Yeah, MacGyver. That's one of the most interesting things about this spinoff is, had it taken off, would we have had MacGyver?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, is that the way the timeline could have been changed, because this is young pre-MacGyver Richard Dean Anderson is married to Tootie's Aunt Sylvia on this show. So Brian, played by Richard Dean Anderson. And now the whole concept for this, for I guess they would have called the show Brian and Sylvia. The concept was it's a mixed marriage. Here's a black lady married to a white dude. And comedy ensues, because it's the early 80s, and that was a rich vein for laughs. So that's what we get. And yeah, if this had been a hit, would MacGyver have happened? And if it did, it would have been a whole different guy. So things worked out for the best for Richard Dean Anderson, I suppose.
And for all of us, because the humor of what would have come of Brian and Sylvia would not have aged well.
Like, yeah. It worked out for everybody. That's a good point. But probably especially, most of all, for Richard Dean Anderson. I never watched MacGyver. Did you watch MacGyver?
I would catch it here and there, and I'm determined to sit down and watch it sometime because it just seems like something I would enjoy a whole lot.
I have literally never seen a single minute of MacGyver. So MacGyver ran for like 7 years, I think, something like that. It ran from 1985 to 1992. huge hit show. And they did like a couple of reunion movies after that. Then they did there was a reboot just a couple of years ago with a new guy being MacGyver. You got the parody version on SNL. It was Will Forte as MacGruber.
Right.
His MacGyver parody character. And that became its own movie as well.
I've seen a bunch of MacGrubers.
I did enjoy the Will Forte as MacGruber, but not so much that I wanted to go back and sample the original material. So yeah, I never saw MacGyver. But it's like a special government agent dude. But he's also a science genius. So he uses science and physics to build crazy contraptions to fight crime, I guess.
Very, very creatively built contraptions.
Right. Yes. He'd be like, hand me that duct tape and give me that paperclip. And then he'd build like a giant mechanical capybara, you know?
Which is why I want to go back and watch it, because that's the way I assemble things too. I take a very MacGyver approach to things when entrusted with anything important. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but that's what I do.
So this is very early in his career. He had a recurring part on General Hospital in the late 70s. This Facts of Life episode is actually just his second credit listed on IMDb.
Yeah, he looks so young.
Yeah. He was a regular on Seven Brides for Seven Brothers after this, 1982. That ran one season. And then 83 TV season, he got another series he was a regular on called Emerald Point NAS, which was a drama, I think, set at a naval base. That was just one season. Then MacGyver would have been just a year or two after that. So this was one of those guys that they just kept plugging into things, like something's going to stick with this guy. Then his other big credit is after MacGyver, a few years after MacGyver, in the late 90s, he got Stargate SG-1.
Oh, yeah.
And again, I've never seen Stargate. This was also a long-running show. There was a movie, and then there were several TV series that came out of it. Stargate was like 97 through 2005, and there were a bunch more Stargate stuff after that. I don't know anything about Stargate. I've never seen it.
I only know that Richard Dean Anderson was in it. That's the extent of my knowledge.
Yeah, and I know that people are huge Stargate fans, and DragonCon used to have a whole separate Stargate track.
Wow.
Yeah, you could spend a whole weekend just doing nothing but Stargate stuff at DragonCon back in the day. Never saw it. It's possible all I've ever seen of Richard Dean Anderson is this episode of Facts of Life. But I have seen him in person also, because he pops up at conventions here and there. And I know I've seen him at Super Mega Fest here in Massachusetts once or twice, and probably somewhere else as well. So he's around, still out there. Richard Dean Anderson, and here he is, Brian. He's a hockey player. They established that he was part of the U.S. Olympic hockey team. Mm-hmm. And then in the series, he was a hockey coach for some kind of a youth group in Buffalo, New York. I like that because, like, they're doing a mixed marriage, you know, theme for the show. Mm-hmm. And they thought, all right, what's the whitest thing this guy could do? Got it. Put him on the Olympic hockey team. Then I was wondering if they were going to commit to a year, because this was 1981.
Right.
In 1980, that was the big year for the U.S. hockey team in the Olympics. That was the big, do you believe in miracles, when they had their miracle victory over the Soviet Union. But I thought, that's too soon, you know. But then, like, later on in the episode, they established that he was on the 1976 U.S. Olympic hockey team. Yeah, it would have been weird to make him part of that famous team that had just won, you know, a few months earlier.
Yeah, that would have taken on a life of its own, I think.
That'd be weird. So there's Brian of Brian and Sylvia. Now, Sylvia, here's Tootie's aunt, and we got to talk about this lady for a minute. The actress, her name was Roseanne, and I can't figure out how to pronounce her last name. Roseanne Caton. It's K-A-T-O-N.
I couldn't tell you.
Anyway. Roseanne Caton or something like that. Looked up her credits. She did a lot of acting, a lot of TV, a lot of movies all through the 70s and 80s. She had a pretty good career. Interesting stuff in her credits. And she also did some stage work, because IMDb said that she had a Broadway lead role in Godspell.
Very nice.
That would have been early 70s, I believe, when Godspell, so maybe one of the first, if not the first, productions of Godspell, apparently, she was part of. Man, I heard so much Godspell. The junior high that I went to, they would just make us listen to Godspell songs all all the time. Ooh. They were obsessed.
That sounds like a bit much.
It was a problem. Anyway, when you look up her TV credits on IMDb, Roseanne's first credit listed was from 1973 for like a TV special version of Godspell called Godspell Goes to Plymouth Plantation for Thanksgiving.
That is, those don't go together.
So she was so weird. They must have been desperate for a Thanksgiving TV special. This was right here in Massachusetts. She was here in Massachusetts.
Right, Plymouth Plantation. I figured that was the one.
Have you been to Plymouth Plantation?
I have.
Yeah, me too. It's so weird. This is one of those places where they're recreating, reenacting the past.
Yeah, pretty effectively, I might add.
It's like a village from like the 1600s or something, where everybody's in their period costumes and acting like you're in the past, you know? My junior high would make us go on little field trips to visit Plymouth Plantation. They probably made us listen to Godspell in the bus the whole way there, I'll bet.
It sounds legit.
Yeah, so I definitely went to Plymouth Plantation, but this TV special, 1973, Godspell Goes to Plymouth Plantation for Thanksgiving, and the description is the Boston cast of Godspell. So apparently she was part of the Boston version of Godspell as well as Broadway. Boston cast of Godspell performs songs from the show at Plymouth Plantation as historian Henry Steele Commager narrates the story of Thanksgiving. Wow.
The heck?
I hope this is available somewhere. I didn't look this up. I would like to have Roseanne sing a song from Godspell, and then you cut to cartoon Snoopy flinging the plate full of popcorn and jelly beans at her. That would be my idea of a Godspell Thanksgiving special.
Now that's a Thanksgiving I can get behind.
I would totally watch this. I forgot to do a YouTube search and see if this thing is out there somewhere. Maybe Ken Reed could find it for us. Isn't that weird? Anyway, she did an episode of Good Times, did some sitcom stuff, some movies. This was interesting. She did a Sanford and Son episode, which I believe was a backdoor pilot in itself, because there was a spinoff of Sanford and Son called Grady. And Grady was this goofy old dude who was like a friend of Sanford on Sanford and Son, an actor named Whitman Mayo. They spun him off into his own sitcom called Grady in 1975.
Ooh.
It lasted 10 episodes, and Roseanne was a regular on this show. She was part of the cast for all 10 episodes. She was Grady's granddaughter. Her brother, Grady's grandson, was played by Haywood Nelson, who a couple years later would be Dwayne on What's Happening.
Oh.
So quite a cast on Grady, but it only lasted 10 weeks. Earlier today, as part of my research, I did watch a few minutes of an episode of Grady.
How did that sit with you?
Not well.
Oh, boy.
It's just, you know, mid-70s generic sitcom junk. Not the best, but, you know, I loved it. But I like stupid things. You know me. So some science fiction credits now as well from the 70s. She did one episode of Logan's Run, the TV series, which I am a big fan of. And more importantly, from the world of Filmation, live action, Saturday morning science fiction, she was in three episodes of Jason of Star Command.
Oh.
This was 1978. She played an alien princess named Allegra. So, Cornflake, you better believe, earlier today, the mayor and I broke out our Jason of Star Command DVD set, because I thought, as part of my research for The Backs of Life, suddenly, weirdly, I'm watching Jason of Star Command. It was fantastic. That was just such a goofy science fiction show. That was the one, they're flying around in space, they have a little robot that is actually a wind-up toy.
Well, that's very cute.
Yeah, Scotty is on it from Star Trek. James Doohan was a regular on the show, so Scotty was there. Sid Haig, Drago, the evil Drago. Super cool show, and it was fun seeing Roseanne on Jason of Star Command. Looking post-Facts of Life, she had a recurring part on Saint Elsewhere for a while in the 80s. Again, did a bunch of movies, probably Bachelor Party, the Tom Hanks movie, probably the best known of the movies that she was in. She got out of acting by the early 90s. Her final IMDb credit is she played a character called Mrs. Manning in two episodes of one of your shows, Full House.
Oh.
Yeah, so she had a pretty good like 20-year run of working very steadily, did a lot of TV and movies, and got out of acting after that, I guess she did Full House and said, you know what? That's enough of that.
That was the zenith of her career. Yeah.
Bob Saget and the Olsen twins drove her right out of Hollywood.
I'm sure that if I went back and watched, I'd recognize her.
I'll bet you would. Now, since then, however, this is kind of cool. She got married in the mid-80s, but her husband is the president and CEO of Operation USA, which is an international charity organization, which I've heard of. I've heard good things about this group. Operation USA does like disaster relief internationally.
Oh, very nice.
And she's been very involved in that. So she's put her non-acting years to good work. So good for her. We also have to point out, Cornflake, one more fun fact about Roseanne is going back to Jason of Star Command. That was 1978. That was September 1978 that she was on the children's program, Jason of Star Command. That exact same month, she was also Playboy's Miss September. She was Playboy Playmate of the Month, September 1978.
Busy lady.
So one extreme to the other. Catch her in your wholesome children's entertainment or on the magazine stands, adults only.
Well, you say that and it doesn't completely catch me off guard. I mean, she's very, very pretty.
So. Oh, yeah. Lovely lady. Absolutely. And yeah, some fun credits, though. So it was fun looking into her career. That's Roseanne. But here she is. She's Tootie's aunt. And she's a newscaster in Buffalo. And that's the plot of this episode, is that she has an opportunity to move to a better TV news anchor job in New York City. Brian, MacGyver, he does not want to leave Buffalo. So they get into a big argument just as Natalie and Tootie arrive for their visit.
Natalie's reaction to Brian when she gets there is fun to watch.
She does that shocked double take, like, wait a minute, you never told me that your aunt was married to a white guy. And that was serious, Different Strokes style comedy.
Yep.
Every week on Different Strokes, which The Facts of Life spun out of course, every week, you know, there's a little Gary Coleman, you know, there's Willis and Arnold. They'd run into some stranger, a waiter at a restaurant or whatever, and they'd be like, oh, yeah, here's our father. And the guy looks up at Conrad Bain and goes like, huh? Yeah. Does the triple take, and the studio audience breaks into laughter because that's hilarious. That's what passed for comedy. We also meet Tootie's grandmother, Sylvia's mother, because she was also going to be a regular, I assume, had this gone to series, because in walks Jeanette Dubois.
Right.
As the grandmother. And I liked how she got the applause from the studio audience. Like, yeah. Just making her entrance, she's recognized and gets the applause break. And that was fun. That's something you don't get anymore.
Nope.
In modern TV shows without the live studio audience. But that was like Happy Days back then. Remember, like, by the final seasons of Happy Days, everybody in the cast would get a big applause break?
They would walk in, yes. It was excessive.
The whole cast. Like, I get, okay, Fonzie walks in, you're going to get the applause. But it was, by the end, it was like Ted McGinley walks in. And hold for applause for 15 seconds.
Well, they were happy and they knew it, so they were clapping their hands.
It was fun seeing Jeanette Dubois, best known as Willona on Good Times, I believe. And we talked about Jeanette Dubois just a couple of months ago. Sadly, she was in our memorial show back in January.
That's right. I knew I had heard that name recently.
Yeah, Jeanette just died last year, but yeah, best known from Good Times. And also, a very important credit is Jeanette wrote and sang the theme song for the Jeffersons, Moving On Up.
That was her.
Yes.
That's right.
And if you know that, you'd catch a little Easter egg inside joke, because when Sylvia tells her mother, tells Jeanette Dubois that she has this opportunity to go to New York, Jeanette says, you're moving on up.
Yes.
Actually does that line in this backdoor pilot. So that was fun. Yeah, so much of the weird racial humor that's kind of a little uncomfortable now. But that was this era, like the 70s into the early 80s, with all the Good Times and Jeffersons and What's Happening and all that stuff. MacGyver at one point says to the aunt, I thought you were blushing, but it's hard to tell with you.
Yeah.
And I was,
what
are we doing? And then she replies with, watch it, pale face.
Yeah.
It was crazy. When Jeanette Dubois comes in, we get even more of this because she says her reaction when she found out who her daughter was marrying, she said, "I was expecting Billy Dee." You know, Billy Dee Williams, Lando Calrissian.
Right.
"I was expecting Billy Dee and ended up with a vanilla hockey puck."
So flattering.
What are we doing? That came out of a writer's room and made it on national TV. I also liked Richard Dean Anderson at one point does the excuse me thing like Steve Martin would.
Yeah, like Steve Martin.
Yeah, which was sort of a timely comedy reference at the time. And then I also like, did you notice they ripped off a Flopcast segment? Because when she comes in,
she's got something in a bag.
Richard Dean Anderson says to her, "What have you got in the bag?
What's in the bag?"
I was afraid they were going to start doing chickens in the news when they got to the TV news studio, you know?
Yeah, they had the perfect setup for that. I would call that a missed opportunity.
They were totally ripping us off, but like 40 years in advance.
Impressive.
I like the references talking about her news job. She at one point she screamed out, "I want Jane Pauley's job." So I like that reference to Jane Pauley was hosting the Today Show at that point because she screamed, "I want Jane Pauley's job." And he responds with, "Why not Barbara Walters while you're at it?"
Mm-hmm.
So now the scene shifts to the TV news studio.
And if things weren't awkward enough already, having a married couple fighting in front of a couple of teenage guests, things get super awkward in the newsroom.
Well, by remarkable coincidence, her husband is scheduled to also be her guest on her news show that night to talk about his hockey team.
Oh, that is such a TV trope. It's not even funny.
Yeah. And of course, it breaks down into this weird on-camera argument negotiation thing.
I would argue that's not the weirdest part, Kevin. Sylvia's boss.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah, that was a weird dude.
Who is he anyway?
His name is Anthony Holland. Yeah, funny guy, kind of a weird character actor type. He did a million things back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, but nothing really popped out among his credits. So I'm sure I saw him in stuff over the years, but nothing terribly notable from his credits jumped out at me. But yeah, funny guy. And then the other thing, as you watch this scene, it's supposed to be the drama of, is she going to leave this job and go to New York, or is she going to stay here? And we know the answer because they're showing us this set and these characters. So obviously, if the show went to series, this is what it was going to be. You know, she's mm-hmm. staying in Buffalo.
Good point.
Which is exactly what happens. And they have their weird reconciliation. And she decides, no, how can I leave this weird show? And how can I take you away from your hockey?
Yeah, the youth hockey team.
And so everything's fine. We're staying in Buffalo. And hopefully we're going to get our own TV spinoff out of this. Except, no, they didn't.
Well, if she's not moving to New York, how would you even make that interesting after that?
It would have been a terrible show. I think the network probably made the right call by passing on Brian and Sylvia. One other note about the other actors in this scene. There's a guy who's credited as just the stage manager, and he's that guy that would just be like, 5 minutes, Sylvia.
Yeah.
His name is Peter Barth. This is his only acting credit, but he does have a lot of credits on IMDb because he played the stage manager. He was an actual stage manager.
Oh.
This was the only time that he has an on-camera credit playing a stage manager, but that's what he actually did.
Wow. And the Facts of Life has a history with that. They got a girl out of a girl's school to be in a show about a girl's school. Right.
I'm sure they toured the country interviewing various stage managers to learn what it was like being a stage manager. And they were so taken with this guy, they thought he should actually be the stage manager on the show. Yeah, his credits as a stage manager include some fun stuff. He did That's Incredible, Bosom Buddies, Give Me a Break, Silver Spoons, and even better for our purposes, he was stage manager for Sid and Marty Krofft on Lidsville and on Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
Wow. Well, I'm glad he got his moment in the spotlight.
Yes. Now, one more note about this backdoor pilot. Obviously, it never became a series. And we never saw these characters again on the Facts of Life. However, they were referenced once, several years later.
We got an epilogue?
We go forward to Facts of Life Season 5, So 3 years later, they did an episode called Crossing the Line. And yes, I did watch this episode again today as research for for tonight's show. And in this episode, Natalie meets Tootie's cousin and they start dating, or almost start dating. And in the final scene, Tootie and Natalie are kind of talking it out. What's going on? How do you feel? Should you date my cousin or not? And Tootie actually mentions, she says, my aunt was married to a white man and now they're divorced.
Oh.
So we got this sad postscript on this backdoor pilot episode. 3 years later, we find out the marriage didn't last between Tootie's aunt and MacGyver. Isn't that weird?
Oh.
Also in that episode, Natalie was also dating this weird, dumb nerd kid who was played by the kid who would go on to be on Mr. Belvedere.
Oh. That's funny.
It's all so crazy. Well, there you go, Cornflake. That was Brian and Sylvia, the legendary Tootie's Aunt and MacGyver episode of The Facts of Life. And as we will do in every one of these Backs of Life episodes, Cornflake, the time has come to rate this episode. And you know our scale. We're working with the classic Tootie scale.
Uh-huh.
Cornflake, how do you rate this episode on a scale of 1 to 10 Tooties?
3 Tooties.
Yeah, I agree. You got to go low. You're going 3. I feel like I want to go a little higher. I'm going up to 4 Tooties.
You're generous.
Yeah, I'm being generous. You are right. And I think that's largely not due to the show itself, but just because of I like the MacGyver factor and I like Roseanne's credits as well. I think it's so fun that she was on Jason of Star Command the same month that she was Miss September in Playboy. I think that's worth a star. But I'm with you. You got to rate this one pretty low.
Well, I think if you, anytime you have the chance to give an extra Tootie, you would. And so, makes sense.
And also, we love them all.
We do.
We're grading on a curve. This is as backdoor pilots go, we've got to go pretty low.
Yes. And well, if you're a Facts of Life fan, you got to take the good and take the bad. So we do.
Absolutely right. All right, Cornflake, I guess in about a month, we will continue with Backs of Life Episode 3. But for now, a couple of plugs before we wrap up, because you and I have both been lurking around other corners of the ESO network this week. What were you up to this week, Cornflake?
So I got beamed back up to the station, and I was on the Earth Station 1 podcast. They finally let me come back, and I was so happy to be there. I get to be on the show with Mike and Alex, and we discussed the movie The Commitments. Hey, just like you and I did back in episode 333 of the Flopcast.
Ooh, I like how you had that episode number at the ready.
I can't remember anything of significance, Kevin, but I do remember things like that.
We did do a Flopcast episode all about The Commitments because that's a favorite movie of mine as well. So yeah, you did a whole Commitments talk. I have not heard this episode yet of Earth Station 1, but I'm looking forward to hearing you talk The Commitments over on Earth Station 1.
Yeah, every time I watch that movie, like, new little things pop out at me, so sure. I had some new insights to share this time around, and I think any of our listeners who check it out will enjoy hearing them.
Yeah, The Commitments is a movie that you are rewarded for multiple viewings. You know, it's a big ensemble cast, so the first time you see it, it's hard to keep everybody straight, and it's all so Irish, so, you know, the accents can be tricky. So, yeah, definitely you should watch The Commitments again and again. It's always good. The music is great, of course. Super fun movie, and I'm sure that was a super fun podcast. I'm looking forward to that. That was Earth Station 1 this week. It's episode 569. I was also hanging out with Mike and Mike this week because I am on this month's episode of the DragonCon Report.
That's right. DragonCon reports. DragonCon's getting closer.
That is our monthly show dedicated to DragonCon here on the ESO network. And yeah, it's been three years since I did a DragonCon report. So it was fun to be back with them to talk all things DragonCon. And who knows what's going to happen for DragonCon this year? Nobody knows. We're hoping for the best, and we'll see. You know? Whatever happens, I will be there in whatever capacity it is safe to do so in. We'll see how it goes. But meanwhile, check out the DragonCon report. And Cornflake, you know what? I think we can wrap up this show for now. Get us out of here.
Right on. We're at flopcast.net. We're on facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Twitter. Our handle is @flopcast. We're even on Instagram, the_flopcast. Any old time you wanna, you can go over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating and or a review. One other thing you should know is that music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Oh, watch for the Sponge Awareness Foundation this week on the hit Saturday morning show, Jason of Sponge Command. And you can also find us in some adult magazines, I believe. So your choice. Cornflake, thanks for joining me here on the Flopcast. Everybody, thanks for joining us once again. Meanwhile, of course, you know, be safe, be kind, be silly, and remember the backs of life are all about you. See you next week.
Peace and cookies.
I'm Lifelong Ensign Charles Kelso.
I'm Federation Envoy Keith Johnson.
I'm Ferengi Counselor Veronica Dashiell.
And I'm Andorian Mess Hall Cook R. Alan Seiler.
And we're the crew of Earth Station Trek. Join us for
episode reviews,
discussions of themes and characters,
and all the news from across the Trekverse.
Our logs cover the full gamut of Star Trek.
From the groundbreaking original series
to the future of the franchise on Paramount Plus,
with lots of stops in between.
Join our crew aboard Earth Station Trek for your regular podcast escape into the Trekverse.
Go bald or go home!
Cornflake, here we are, secret after show.
Well, hey. Well, this is as good a spot as any, I think, to give an update on my New Year's resolution, don't you think?
Absolutely. Only the secret people who listen to the promo deserve to know what you have to share with us right now for your New Year's resolution. What's going on?
Well, I'm holding it up to the microphone, but you can't see it. What I have here is this adorable picture of a puppy dog. You remember from earlier this year that I enrolled in a pen pal club and it was matched based on mutual interests. And anybody who's listened to the Flopcast long enough has occasionally heard my dog Callie in the background. And I was paired with somebody who also has a rescue as a pet, and she sent me a picture of her adorable dog, Teddy Bear.
You signed up for it like a nerd pen pal service.
Yes, the International Geek Girls.
Yes,
and
yes.
I was paired with somebody who also likes dogs and likes rescues. But it's like she knows me, Kevin, because the dog is in a hammock. And I love hammocks.
Right. Things are going well?
Yes. Send more pictures of dogs.
Things have not grown tense and uncomfortable quite yet?
Well, not yet, but it's my turn to write back, so we'll see.
So here's where it all goes wrong. Is there any chance that the girl is not involved at all and you're actually receiving communication directly from the dog?
I hadn't even stopped to consider that.
Through the mail, you can't tell. I knew there was something weird about this nerd pen pal service you signed up for, and now it's all becoming clear. It's a weird, evil dog conspiracy, and you're in the middle of it.
What have I done?
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.